Welcome, everyone, to episode 15 of True Crime All the Time. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, how are you today?
Hey, doing good, man. Friday.
Are you? You sure you are?
It's Friday.
Yeah, we had a long work day.
We did.
And now we're in the studio recording.
Yep.
You wouldn't have it any other way, right?
That's where else would I want to be?
Probably home with your family.
Besides that, where else would I want to be?
Where else would you want to be? I got to give a shout out to our latest Patreon supporter, and that's Sarah Beth. Sarah Beth, thank you so much. If anybody would like to support the show, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/truecrimeallthetime. We started adding some weekly bloopers and some other stuff that hit the cutting room floor. Most of it's Gibby, but
yeah,
he's not happy about that.
That's what not can you fair. Do?
Another great way to support the show is to go out and give us a nice rating on iTunes. And there again, that doesn't cost anything. You know, telling your friends who are into true crime about the show, that doesn't cost a thing. And that helps us out greatly. So there's a lot of ways to support us, and it's not all financial. And if you can take the time to do some of those things, it helps us a lot too. Hey folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. All right, Gibbs, are you ready to tackle the case of Christian Longo?
I am.
It's a rough one.
Sure.
Guy's kind of scummy.
Scummy.
I think scummy. Yeah, I think scummy is probably not harsh enough for this guy.
Yeah.
He's a real piece of, you know what?
Yes, he is.
A little heartbreaking. And really, I mean, to me, this has to be one of the worst things that any man can do. I think you and I were talking before we started, comparing it a little bit to Scott Peterson.
A little bit.
And you could make the case that this guy is worse than Scott Peterson.
Absolutely.
And that's saying a lot because we know how bad Scott Peterson was. But, you know, a man is supposed to protect his family, and this guy basically does the unthinkable
right
to his family.
It's just on so many different levels, from the trust factors to the absolutely, you know, what happens throughout the story that we're going to tell. I mean, it's just so many different levels.
Oh, yeah. There's a ton of stuff. So as we normally do, let's start with Christian's early life. You know, Christian Longo was born in Michigan in 1974. And he was raised by very strict Jehovah's Witness parents. So his parents were Jehovah's Witnesses. This is different than a lot of the cases that we talk about, though, because by all accounts, he had a good childhood.
Yeah, from statements he's made and other people have made, that basically, you know, it was good times, you know, growing up and being involved with the church and good times in school. I mean, just no issues, right?
Yeah, very strange, right?
Yeah.
So I don't have any statistics on how many times he was dropped on his head. I don't have any bedwetting. I don't have any stories about him.
Animal abuse.
Yeah, torturing animals. And that's something that maybe, Scott Peterson.
Right.
Was, I think, the only other one that we did.
Yeah.
Where there wasn't some type of childhood,
early on
history that people would look back on and say, well, this is the reason why this person did what they did.
Right.
At a young age, he was participating in in the door-to-door ministry with the church.
He was.
I think that's part of the Jehovah's Witness training that right. that they receive.
Probably to build the membership.
Yep. I can't speak a lot about that because I don't know much about it.
I don't either.
You know, one thing that was said was he didn't date until he was, you know, very late in his teens.
In today's world, it's not that strange. Maybe back then, I don't know.
Well, no, I think maybe for somebody that's raised in a very strict Jehovah's Witness household, that probably wasn't strange at all.
Probably pretty common, I guess.
I would think so.
Yeah.
You know, but he does get married at a very, very young age. He gets married at 19 years old.
Yeah.
And so he marries a Mary Jane Baker.
Okay.
Who's 7 years older than him.
So he married an older woman.
Yeah. He's 19. That would have made her 26. Man, 19's young.
19 is young.
You know, think back when you were 19.
And
especially, you know, not having dated, not having, you know, had a lot of the experiences that most of us probably had growing up.
Relationship skills, coping skills, things like that you develop throughout a relationship.
I think, and maybe some of that will come into play
later
on. But, you know, they meet, you know, Mary Jane Baker's in the church as well. So the first time they meet is in the church parking lot. Courtship lasted, I don't know how long.
Love at first sight.
It couldn't have been too long because they got married when he was 19 years old.
Right.
Now, a theme that's going to come up in this case pretty much throughout is, you know, they begin having money problems from the get-go. Number one, he's 19 years old, so...
Yeah, how much money could he possibly be making?
Right. She's 26, but I'm not sure what she's doing at this point. He's not very good with money.
No.
That's probably an understatement.
Right.
Because... even before they get married, he goes out and buys her a 3.5-carat diamond ring on a payment plan. I don't know how much that bad boy costs, but...
That's mistake number one.
That's pretty expensive.
Yeah.
You know, what is it, 3 times your salary or what's the...
Well, yeah.
And they say that's BS anyway.
Right, right. But I mean, regardless of what it is, just the fact that you got to put it on a payment plan, you're setting yourself up for... financial issues. That's just my financial background.
I would agree. At 19 years old, he's probably not making very much money.
Throwing yourself in a hole already.
You know, 3.5-carat diamond ring was way more than three times his.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't imagine salary. What it's probably a car payment at the time.
Yeah, I believe he was working at a camera store at the time. Yeah. So yeah, he probably wasn't making a whole lot of money.
No.
And so they, you know, they're experiencing a lot of financial trouble, didn't have enough money to pay the rent and the ring payment at the same time, one month. Because remember, he's on a payment plan for who knows how long. So he ends up stealing $108 from the camera store that he worked at. And all the employees are questioned about it, including Longo, and he doesn't say anything.
So this is his first time getting his teeth wet, or is that the saying, teeth wet?
I don't think that is the saying.
It's the first time he's biting into... to
what is it with you and the teeth and the biting? And
but he's getting into the theft.
I do think this is the first time that, you know, he's done anything illegal.
Right.
But let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
And his conscience gets to him. So he does have a conscience.
Yeah.
And, you know, the next morning he goes back and he writes a check for the $108, leaves it on the counter along with his letter of resignation. And so, I mean, that tells you something about him early on.
Right.
You know, he did have some morals. He had a conscience. This wasn't a guy, at least at this point, that was able to steal money and just say, that doesn't bother me at all.
Right.
So basically that month the rent didn't get paid. He had to pay for the ring and he had to return the money that he'd stolen. Now, one thing that happened because of this, though, his roommates who were, you know, also Jehovah's Witnesses, they went and told the elders of the church about the incident. And Longo was sanctioned, I guess, at the church.
And I think, again, we don't know much about that church.
I really don't know.
Well, we might have some listeners that, that might let us know, but I think it's their moral responsibility to alert the elders at the church when somebody does something wrong, regardless of how close they are to them.
I don't know that to be a fact, but I'm going with you on that.
I think it is. Let us know.
If you say it, it must be true.
So,
but apparently he lost some of his responsibilities within the congregation. You know, his wife, Mary Jane, she stands by him at this point. But one big thing happens because of this, because he lost, you know, some of his responsibilities. One of the things they did is they took away his and Mary Jane's ability to get married in the Kingdom Hall, right, which apparently was a big deal.
It had to be huge since they both were from that church. So now you can't get married, maybe same church that their parents were married in. So I'm sure it was a blow, probably especially to the wife.
Yeah, and I guess he, you know, Longo goes to the elders and he says, I'm repentant. And he basically, at that point, says, you know, I would never do anything along those lines again. I will never do anything illegal, immoral, or unsavory. Well, we know that's not true.
No.
Or he wouldn't be the subject of a True Crime All the Time episode.
Yeah.
So let's fast forward a few years. And at this point, Longo is working at a company that distributes the New York Times.
Okay.
And there's really only one reason I bring this up. And it's because while he was there, he would regularly read articles that were written by a New York Times writer named Michael Finkel. And Finkel's going to play a weird role in this whole story that will come down the pike. But staying in chronological order, this is the period of time where he's working at this this company that distributes the New York Times. One thing that I read a lot of was that, you know, apparently Longo, he had, I don't know if you'd call it an addiction, but he really was into cars, clothing, lifestyle.
Lifestyle. He had an image that he wanted. I think he had a image in his head how he wanted to see his life, right? Or how he was going to be perceived by people.
Regardless of whether the job or the money that he was making would right. support it.
Right. He still wanted to have that, you know, that high-end lifestyle, that opulent
Yeah.
lifestyle.
He wanted a nice car. He wanted to always be wearing nice clothes yeah. and be able to take vacations. And, you know, so because of that, you know, he had maxed out basically every credit card they had before the birth of their first child, Zachary. That's not, I mean, this is not a good path, right? That no, we're talking the, about to start down yeah, financially.
He's not setting a good pattern. That's for sure.
Yeah. The very, very irresponsible when it comes to money. You know, at this point, they're both working. But after Zachary's born, Mary Jane quits her job to stay home with the children. I mean, that just makes the financial situation even tougher.
Yeah, so the stress is going to have to build up on him, right?
Because, yeah.
I mean, that's he's the only one bringing in the money now.
And then not to mention, they have two more children within the next 2 years.
Yeah.
So they had all these children very quickly.
Which is expensive.
By all accounts, they, you know, they loved the kids. They were
yeah.
thrilled about having these kids, but their finances just kept...
That's a lot of diapers and milk.
Well, oh, well, we both know that.
Oh, yeah.
So one thing that Longo cannot do is go to his parents for help. And the reason that he couldn't, or the reason that he said he couldn't, was because of pride. So he's very prideful.
Right.
To the point where, like we mentioned, he wanted people to think that he was really doing well. So he can't go ask for help because then people are going to know that he's not.
It's going to crumble the facade.
Yeah. And I think that's a great word because his whole thing is about this facade of
opulence
and this image. That's another good word. But about building this image that he can't afford.
Which really, in our world, I think it's probably fair to say there's a big percentage of population that lives like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's why you see the high amount of debt, bankruptcies, and things like that. I don't even get off on it.
No, I think but, you're but right. I think
I do think people live beyond their means.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Some because of certain life events, but others because they're chasing down to be like the Smith or Jones across the street.
Yeah.
Not knowing that they probably make a whole lot more money, but they're trying to keep up and have the new SUV, have the boat, have the lake house, or have the new two-story, four-bedroom, two-bath, two-car garage house. If you don't make the money, you shouldn't be chasing that down.
Yeah, it's tough, right?
Right.
But it's the good thing is that most people don't go to the extreme of Christian Longo.
No.
That's the good thing.
Right.
So at this point, Christian starts a construction cleanup business.
Okay.
With a fellow member of the church.
Another parishioner.
Yeah, another parishioner. And actually, the business takes off.
Yeah.
He starts doing kind of well in this business. But again, he goes too fast. And he starts this rapid expansion of the business.
So he's growing the business too fast.
Too fast, and it can't keep up.
Yeah.
And what happens is the business finds itself in debt really quick.
Right.
And kind of like his personal life, he's spending more than what he's bringing in.
Yep.
You know, instead of building the business slowly,
right,
and then once he got enough money expanding, he went too quick.
It's a problem.
It is a problem. So the Longo family credit cards are maxed out.
Yeah.
You know, they got nothing coming in, but to everybody around them, it looks like they're doing great.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, you know, they have that. When I say they, I mean him.
Yeah. Right?
She's in the blind. She doesn't know.
Yeah.
But
he's not telling her that.
No, he's not. Yeah. He's controlling the finances. But I mean, they're living they got that facade out there, and he's playing it very well.
So one thing that he does to keep up this facade, as you call it, which I think is a great word, he exaggerates about the success of his company, and he gets his father to invest tens of thousands of dollars in the business.
So, I mean, he really, at this point, morals are out the door.
I think he's going downhill.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't go to his father for money in the beginning because out of pride.
Right.
But now he can go to his father and say, hey, I've got this business.
I got this great investment for you.
That's doing great. Do you want to invest? And his father does.
Yeah.
And it's not long after that, you know, the next thing you know, Longo's out. He's got a boat. He's got two jet skis. And he told some friends that he won the jet skis in a contest. He bought two cars. But again, he's not making any money. So, you know, one day he wakes up and there's a tow truck in his driveway repossessing his Ford Taurus.
Repo man.
All right. So what does Longo do? His other car breaks down around, you know, either around this time or not long after it. So he makes a fake driver's license. So right now we're seeing this guy's becoming a major con artist.
Yeah. So now he's really getting into some of the technical aspects of con artistry.
Con artistry. How about that?
I know.
So he takes the fake driver's license. He goes to a Pontiac dealer and he takes out a Montana for a test drive and he just never brings it back.
I'm sorry. Who does that, you know?
Christian Longo.
But I mean,
so talk about his wife being in the dark. You know, she asks him after a while, why haven't we got any statements? Like, why are we not being billed for this brand new vehicle?
Right. Where's the invoices, statements, whatever, right?
Right.
To make the payments.
So, you know, going con, right, what he does is he gets on his computer and he starts making fake invoices. And wow, he mails it to his own house so that his wife can open.
What extreme.
I mean.
Wow. So he gets on like a Quicken or something.
Yeah,
or,
who right, knows what it was.
Makes up a, yeah, yeah.
Maybe just did a Word doc.
Word hell, doc and, yeah, actually goes to the post office, sends it to himself so she can see a statement.
It's when you start down that path of, think of it like a Ponzi scheme.
Right.
It's very hard to get out.
Oh,
because you're taking people money from these people to pay returns to money of other people.
Robin,
you just can't get out of it, and it just snowballs and snowballs.
I mean, he's robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Now,
that doesn't work.
He wasn't in the same situation. I think he could have got himself out of this and stopped
Maybe.
The conning.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, he doesn't. His marriage to Mary Jane's not going well. Apparently, you know, she called her sister in 2000. She had discovered some emails between Christian and another woman.
Well, that can't be good.
That's not good for the marriage, no. Usually. I know my wife's not a big fan.
No, she wouldn't be.
But she confronts Christian about it.
Right.
And, you know, he allegedly told her that she hadn't been any fun since the children came.
So she's taking care of the kids. So because she's busy taking care of, three
kids.
Three kids. She's
no fun. Probably doesn't have any time for him.
Yeah. Last thing she probably wants to hear.
Yeah. And he tells her he doesn't love her anymore. In spite of all this, Mary Jane stays with him. But she goes to the elders, right? Because they're still in the church.
Right.
And she goes to the elders and she tells them about it.
Because it's the right thing to do.
It was the right thing to do. And apparently, as you said, it's something that they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
I don't know that for a fact, but I'm really believing you on this one.
I'm sure it will be confirmed.
But the tough part about this one was there really was no evidence that he had had a physical relationship with another woman.
Right.
But she did have these emails. So once again, he's sanctioned.
And as most women would probably tell you, even if he didn't have a physical, just the fact that he had an emotional relationship is just as bad, if not worse. When you are having that type of conversation, that type of relationship, sharing that information with somebody but your wife, I think that probably hurts just as deep, if not deeper.
Yeah, I don't know what the actual substance of these emails were,
right.
But I would agree with you that women don't like that.
You know, emotional affair is probably worse than a physical affair.
I don't know if that's the case, but I'm sure we'll have people tell us one way or the other. I think they would be viewed as equally
bad.
Bad.
Yeah.
You're not going to be
happy with either one.
Husband of the year.
No.
Doing either one of those things. That's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust Simply Safe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. Simply Safe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try Simply Safe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. Simply Safe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/TCAT. That's simplysafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like Simply Safe. I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily, Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area, and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, and with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS. So like I said, he gets sanctioned by the church. whatever that means in this situation. But, you know, he kind of puts on his con artist hat again, and using his computer, he starts printing fake checks from different companies, claiming that they owed his business money.
So he made a fake check with another company's logo and wrote the check from that company to his company.
Correct.
Because he felt they owed him money.
Oh, I'm not sure they owed him money. I think it was a way to get money from them.
Okay.
I think the premise was that they owed him money.
Right.
I don't know
if they actually did. Yeah. But maybe he thought they did.
Right? I don't know. I just think he was trying to figure out a way to get money.
So he uses their name on a fake check, makes a check out to his company and cashes it. Yes. Basically is what you're saying.
Yeah, because the companies end up contacting the police, and it's not that long before he finds himself in hot water and in a courtroom.
Well, I bet. Yeah.
So this is like, you know, 2000. So I'm assuming they didn't owe him money. I guess it would be a crime to do it either way. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say that they actually didn't owe him money. Right. I don't know. So Longo pleads guilty to the fake check swindle.
Well, let me guess. Just based off of other stories that we've done, that nothing really happens to him.
Yeah, I mean, he gets 3 years probation.
Oh, of course.
Unlike other people that we've talked about, he didn't really have much of a record at all.
Oh, okay.
You know, so, you know.
Because they don't know about the stolen
van. They don't
van.
Know about, he hasn't been convicted or suspected of any of that other stuff.
Okay.
So that doesn't surprise me too much. You know, it is something we talk about in a lot of our episodes, how one slap on the wrist leads to more and more things. And it's so strange because they're lenient about some things, but if you got a little bit of weed, bam, you're going straight to jail.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah, it's weird on
how got so many people in jail, and I don't want to get off on a rant about other stuff.
Yeah.
So he is ordered to pay restitution payments to these companies. It's money that he doesn't have.
Right.
Obviously, because he's been misrepresenting his finances this whole time.
Right.
And the reason why he's doing some of this, you know, illicit behavior or crimes or whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
Is because he doesn't have any money. So they want him now to pay restitution. And it's at this point that the elders, they actually read about this check forgery in the newspaper. And he was basically kicked out.
So he's shunned, huh?
Yeah, he's shunned or whatever.
Turned away.
Whatever the Jehovah's Witness term is for.
Disfellowshipped.
Is that what it's called? Disfellowshipped.
Yeah.
Good research, Gibbs.
I know.
So this is where Longo would claim that this is a period of his life that was like a defining moment.
Yes.
Because he promises his wife that he's going to be truthful. He's going to be faithful. He's going to straighten out all their finances. He's going to stop all this crazy illegal.
It's his rebirth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is basically where he's saying, I'm going to be the husband or the man or whatever that I'm supposed to be.
Right.
But right before that, or as part of that, he wants to give, for each of them to give a present to each other. And he wants to give corrective eye surgery for Mary Jane. And he wants her to give him scuba lessons.
So
they don't have any money and they're going to turn.
Yeah.
They're going to turn a new leaf. But before we do,
let's get $5,000 of eye surgery and take a few hundred, you know, $1,000 scuba, lessons.
Right. So that's kind of like, the smoker that says, I'm going to quit, but I got 8 packs. And I got to smoke all these. I got to smoke all 8 packs.
Well, they cost money.
They did. That's right. I can't. I guess it's not quite the same.
No.
That makes no sense financially, right? But nothing that he's done up to this point has made any sense financially.
No, he's not an E.F. Hutton.
And he has no credit because he's maxed out everything.
I would hope he wouldn't have any credit at this point.
Well, the problem is he gets credit.
That's not good.
By taking out a card in his dad's name.
Wow.
So another.
So now he's into forgery.
Yeah. I don't know how that was more part forgery. Of the turn the new leaf.
Must be.
Program. It doesn't seem like it fits in with that. But he would go on to amass $100,000.
So this wasn't it's just an A credit card.
And that couldn't be, I was going to say, that couldn't be one credit card.
If it was, it had to be a, you know, special American Express, right?
Gold
or platinum black card thing that they have out there, right? So $100,000 in debt.
In his dad's name.
That he had, put in his dad's name. Clearly they didn't have credit card alerts back then.
LifeLock, man.
I wish they had a LifeLock.
We need to get LifeLock as a sponsor.
LifeLock. Contact us if this is a good time that you would probably wish that you were on our show.
So I think at this point, Gibby, he knows that he's crossed a line that he can never come back from.
He did, yeah.
And so
it's hard to turn back after you spend put your dad in $100,000 debt.
Right. And they've got creditors that are calling them all the time. They've got friends and different church members that are stopping by the house. They're concerned about Mary Jane, especially.
Sure.
And Christian figures out that we got to get out of here. And he needs a fresh start. So he gets the family together. And even though as part of his probation, he's not allowed to leave Michigan.
Supposed to stay in Michigan.
But he doesn't abide by that either. Because he picks up and they move to some dinky warehouse in Toledo.
Yeah. So just cross the...
Not far from Michigan. Right? Yeah. It's just across the line.
Yeah, just across the border there.
But technically a violation of his probation. So what he told Mary Jane that he was going to renovate this kind of dinky warehouse into some type of city loft.
Right, some cool loft project.
I don't know if he had the means or the capability to do that.
I think in his head he thought he did.
Maybe.
You know, this is a guy that, and you know, in his head he probably sees this cool lifestyle being in a loft downtown, you
and
know?
He's just trying to figure out different ways to get to it.
Yeah,
right. It seems to be what he's doing his whole life.
Problem is every lie turns into more lies to cover up lies, and you forget what lies you've told, and then you have to tell more lies to cover up the ones that you forgot that you already told. It's just a never-ending pyramid of lies.
Yeah. So we got to talk about this warehouse a little bit, though.
A little bit.
Because, you know, it's him, Mary Jane.
Mm-hmm.
They got their three young kids.
Yeah.
They got no kitchen.
No running water then,
no
right?
Plumbing. I mean, it's just...
It's like camping indoors.
Camping indoors.
Yeah.
And at this point, he's lying to his wife. He's basically told her that he's paid the rent for 6 months in advance. In order to stay afloat, he goes back to forging and cashing more checks. So one thing happens, Gibby, during this move, or as a result of this move, I should say, and that was that Mary Jane, you know, she drifted out of touch with her family. You know, she's got a sister, Sally, and apparently, you know, she was probably pretty close to her family. So what happens is immediately they start to worry. When she's not contacted them within a certain period of time.
Right.
Because I don't think this was a scenario where they went over to her house and or her family's house and said, hey, we're going to move. I think they just picked up and bolted.
Yeah. Yeah, they were.
And her family had no idea.
Right.
So her sister is out looking for her. And I'm not sure why, but she has some idea about Toledo. Because she's out driving around in Toledo.
Right.
And I'm not sure why that was. But there had to have been something that tipped her off. So her sister Sally is canvassing the area and spots her dog.
How lucky is that?
That's pretty lucky. Because Toledo's not a small city.
But lucky for her, she came across the dog.
Yeah, she actually speaks to Mary Jane at this point. And Mary Jane tells her everything's okay. She doesn't want to leave.
Right.
So the ultimate conclusion is that Mary Jane refuses to leave Christian and doesn't want to go back to Michigan with her sister. That's the bottom line of...
Yeah. Clearly their bond is pretty strong at this point, husband and wife.
It has to be.
Even with all this...
For her knowing everything that he's done.
Again, I mean, how much is he sharing? We don't know, but... but she's got to know most of it at this point.
Yeah, she has to. You know, and Longo goes on to, you know, he starts stealing machinery and he's trying to sell this machinery. I don't know why I can't say the word machinery, but he's trying to sell this machinery and the cops are on to him. But before he can be charged, because again, he's stealing this machinery and we told you he's passing bad checks.
Right.
The police are closing in on him. So he picks the family.
Time to go.
And says, boop, we're out of here. And they bolt again. So essentially, at this point, they're running from the law. And one story that I really liked, because I got a kick out of it, is so Mary Jane's driving in a stolen SUV. Christian Longo is driving in a stolen Penske moving truck.
And she doesn't know these are stolen.
No.
No.
I don't
really think she knows the law is chasing after him.
Yeah.
I think she's just thinking, here we go. Right. One of those crazy things. He wants to move again.
Yeah, because she will say later on to people that she had no idea that anything was wrong. You know, basically they're just moving around. They're staying at campsites. They're spending very little money because they have nothing.
I think she just knew that there was some issues early on, right? But she didn't know about the stealing of the equipment, machinery, and all that other stuff that he was doing that led, you know, for the police to, you know, want to pursue him.
Yeah, she doesn't know at this point that he's wanted.
Right.
Right. But her family is worried still because now they can't find her in Toledo. They know she's not there anymore. And they basically file a missing persons report. Christian Longo's parents are also worried and are trying to get different law enforcement agencies to help because they don't know where they are either. There's no contact between Christian and Mary Jane and either one of their families at this point. So eventually Christian decides, for whatever reason, I don't know how he came to this conclusion, but that the family needs to go all the way out to Oregon. Yeah. So they're making this trek in stolen vehicles.
So they're making the trek out there, staying at cheaper hotels and motels and even some campsites. And they don't have a lot of money. They're running out of money. So to the point that he ends up hawking her wedding ring to help get them where they need to be. And then on top of that, you know, it's reported that on the way out there at different stops along the way that he was slowly getting rid of personal belongings at different locations, getting rid of photo album books, getting rid of some of the kids' toys, some of the clothing, and leaving them at trash container sites throughout. And
so is this his, not his stuff, Mary Jane's stuff and the kids' stuff?
Yes. Yes. So it comes into play later.
A little foreshadowing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's important.
But eventually they get to their new home state, which is Oregon.
All right, Gibbs. So when they get to Oregon, they rent a small vacation house, I guess, in this little town called Waldport. You know, they're only there a few weeks and they fall behind on the payments because, again,
imagine that.
Yeah, they got no money.
Right.
You know, like you said, he's hawked most of the things that they have already.
Yeah.
And they have no net worth. Nothing to fall back on. They have no credit cards because they have no credit left.
Yeah.
They've maxed out everything.
And they already pawned her ring, so what else are they going to do?
Right. Nothing.
Nothing of value.
Somehow Longo convinces the manager of this very nice bayfront condo complex that he's a telephone company employee and that he's waiting for a paycheck. Based on this story alone, this tells you what kind of con man Christian Longo is.
Oh, yeah.
Just based on this story, the manager allows the Longos to move into a $1,500 a month condo with no money up front. So, again, just another kind of insight into what type of con man this guy was, and he was able to pull off some.
Yeah, he got to move into a place that he didn't have to put any money down.
So Longo gets a job part-time at a Starbucks.
Because that will help pay the $1,500.
Right. Because part-time at Starbucks,
yeah,
that might cover
the $1,500
just the $1,500.
Right.
And it's not even like a Starbucks. It's inside of Fred Meyer. So it's a Starbucks inside of another store.
Right.
He's humiliated because we talked about the fact that he strives to be this ultra successful person. He wants these fancy cars. He wants to wear nice clothes.
He wants that opulent lifestyle.
Yeah, he does. He wants everything. So what he does, he tells his boss and he tells all the employees there at the Starbucks that he's basically rich. Yeah. That he's got this internet business that he's making all this money from, and that he only is taking this part-time job because he loves Starbucks coffee.
So that's how he deals with his ego thing.
Right. Then.
Yeah.
His ego will not let him.
Yeah, I just do it to do something. That's why I work here.
Work at Starbucks and make an honest wage without coming up with some story of why he has to do it. Family struggling. They got no money. Even after he's making these very small paychecks, I assume, working part-time, he's not going to be making a ton of money.
No.
So that money is eaten up very quickly. The rent on the condo is not getting paid. They got no groceries to feed the kids. I mean, things are just they're not going well. No,
it's not getting better.
You know, it gets so low at one point that, you know, Longo's got to get gas and he has no money. So he runs in, you know, he pulls into the gas station, pumps his gas and has to drive away without paying.
I don't know if that's a low point for him.
Did I say it was a low point?
I think things get really bad, but I don't know how.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that he hasn't already been doing that.
Some people just do that for kicks.
Yeah.
But you're right.
So I think he tells it as a low point for him, but really, is it a low point for him? I don't think it is. I mean, I think the low point was maybe when you charged $100,000 on your dad's credit card.
Or hocked your wife's
wedding
ring. That's a big deal, yeah.
To get your stolen vehicles out further out west.
So the one thing he knows is that, again, he's not going to be able to stay at this condo because he can't pay the rent. He's not told his wife yet because, again, you know, he leaves her she's in the dark basically all the time.
Sure.
He's telling her one thing, and usually it's the exact opposite of what's going on. So we get to the night of December 16th, 2001, and this is a night that Longo would describe as the beginning of the end. So now, Gibbs, we've got to get to the gruesome part of this story. You know, we've talked about all the different things that have kind of led up to putting Christian Longo in the position that he's in. And, you know, he did all this himself. He put himself and his family
in
a very bad situation.
Right.
And we talked about the night of December 16th, 2001. This is basically where he starts to hatch his plan. Fast forward 3 days later, December 19th, 2001, a man calls the police about a gruesome find. The body of a small boy floating face down in the water near his lot at the RV park. You know, obviously they get the body out, they take pictures and they do all the things that the police do. And this digitally enhanced photo of the boy, because they had to digitally enhance him because you know what happens when people spend some period of time in water and it's not good.
No.
But they've got this photograph and they're able to release it to the news media. A couple comes forward after seeing the picture on the news. And this is a couple that had babysat the children, I guess, from time to time.
Okay.
They're in Oregon. And they come forward and they say that this child in this enhanced photo looks a lot like Zachary Longo. Now we got to fast forward 3 days later. So this would be the 22nd. Divers are searching like an area where Zach was found. And they discover the body of a small girl. She's been weighted down with a big rock in a pillowcase.
Yeah.
The pillowcase is tied to her ankle. So Gibbs, both children found only in their underwear.
Right.
In the same place. We know the four-year-old is Zachary. And this little girl would turn out to be Sadie Longo. So that's two of the Longo children found. It would be 5 days later, divers are searching a waterway, and they find two suitcases at a marina underneath the dock.
Okay.
That is adjacent to the condo complex there where the Longos lived.
Okay.
Unfortunately, when they opened the suitcases, one suitcase contained the tiny body of Madison. She was the little two-year-old. There was some clothing in there, and then there was a dumbbell that would have been used to weight down the suitcase.
Yeah.
The other suitcase had some hair sticking out of it, and when they unzipped that, they found the naked remains of Mary Jane Longo.
Strange. The first two kids just had their underwear on. I'm guessing the third one doesn't really say how her body was found, but then the wife was totally naked.
Yeah, it didn't say whether Madison was naked, but it just said there was some clothing in there with her, so yeah.
I remember reading that he chose to pack extra clothes in there to keep the body from moving around because she was so tiny. So he wanted to, it's kind of strange.
It is sick, yeah,
that he took the time to put clothing in to pack around her and then threw the dumbbell in there on top of it to make sure it weighted down. But anyway, sick guy.
So they would do autopsies on all four of the bodies, and they would determine that all four had died of asphyxia. And then also when it came to Mary Jane, there was evidence that there was some blunt force trauma to her face. So likely she had been either punched or, you know, hit with something hard, you know, right in her face. There was some evidence, Gibby, I read, but there was also conflicting reports that Zachary and Sadie, remember those were the first two that were found, that they had also died from drowning, which obviously they can tell if there's water in there.
Basically saying they were thrown into the water still alive.
Yeah, but I read conflicting reports on that. Yeah. I read some that said that they were drowned and some that said they weren't.
You know, either way is bad, but I think it would be worse that you would torture your kids by throwing them into the water alive.
Well, right. If they drowned,
yes,
that means they were...
They suffered even more.
They were alive at the time that he put them in. So initially, you know, the police are looking for Christian Longo. They've got to question him to find out what's going on. By the next day, they already have charged him with murder. So, I mean, we're talking very... 27th is when they find the two suitcases. The 28th of December is when he's charged with murder, but he's nowhere to be found.
No.
Right? He's bolted again.
Yep.
After killing, you know, all four members of his family. And pretty quickly, he makes the FBI's 10 most wanted list.
He does.
And, you know, he was even profiled on America's Most Wanted, John Walsh's show. And
fairly popular back then.
Yeah, it was. I used to watch it all the time.
Right.
And apparently, Christian's parents even were on the show and cooperated with giving information to try to help find him.
Yeah. So did they get any tips out of the show or...
I don't know if it came directly out of America's Most Wanted or not, but there was a tip that led authorities to Mexico.
Okay.
True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social
social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT.
You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy's. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up.
So Christian Longo had apparently been staying in this Mexican cabana with a German photographer. I don't know how he managed to set that up. But when the authorities catch up with him, he identifies himself as Michael Finkel.
Oh, here we go.
Now we're coming full circle.
Right.
Because we said Michael Finkel was a writer for the New York Times. Christian Longo says that he's Michael Finkel, a travel writer for the New York Times.
Okay.
So he's basically assumed...
Yeah.
This Michael Finkel's identity while he's hiding out in Mexico.
Right. So I'm guessing that he's pretending to be this Finkel guy, right?
Finkel and Einhorn.
Finkel and Einhorn. So I think he meets this German photographer to add to his facade again.
And I think maybe that role. Maybe that would make sense if he's portraying himself as a writer.
Yeah. He's selling it to everybody down there.
He meets a photographer that's kind of a...
She gets interested in the stories that he's telling, even though they're not true.
It's kind of a natural match, maybe. The real Michael Finkel is now embroiled in this Christian Longo saga. And it would go on to be like this bizarre twist of this story. So I want to play just a little audio of the real Michael Finkel.
I received the most confounding phone call of my life. A reporter in Oregon called me up, and he told me that a man who'd been on the FBI's 10 most wanted list had just been arrested in Mexico, where he had taken on my name and my identity. Compounding all of this, I found out that a murderer had impersonated me, and at the exact same time that I was... basically having my identity stolen. I'd lost my own identity. I had made a terrible mistake. I had lied in an article that I wrote for the New York Times Magazine. I had done what's called a composite character. I'd combined a lot of interviews together to make one character and was caught for this and fired. I made a really terrible judgment error, and I lied to my editors, and it was one-time act for which I've not forgiven myself. And I handed in a falsified story. And at that moment, almost to the hour, the most confounding, interesting material I've ever had fell in my lap. He had read many of my articles. In a nutshell, he was a fan. He said he'd always wanted to be a globe-trotting journalist. And when he was on the lam in Mexico, he assumed what he called his dream job. It was the most complicated, intricate, bizarre relationship of my life. Was not journalist subject in any typical way. He took on my identity first, which is not the way usually a journalist and subject meet. We wrote each other more than 1,000 pages of handwritten letters. We spoke on the phone 51 times. I visited with him in jail. In the very end of our relationship, after his trial, in a letter, he confessed to me that he murdered all 4 members of his family. He's blamed his wife for initiating the crime, which is something that I do not believe at all. I had psychologists read some of his letters, and they diagnosed him as what's called narcissistic personality disorder, an extremely inflated sense of self. He thought he was very important, that his family's fortunes were diving, and that if he wasn't going to be around to take care of his family, they wouldn't be able to survive without him.
He puts it pretty succinctly there. Now, Michael Finkel as he says, was fired from his job at the New York Times. But he would go on to write a book based on his interaction with Christian Longo.
Kind of a bromance, really.
Yeah, it did kind of turn into a bromance a little bit. The book would be called True Story. They made a movie out of it a few years ago.
Yeah.
With James Franco playing Christian Longo and Jonah Hill playing Finkel.
Finkel.
And the movie's pretty good. I enjoyed it. But it really plays up the angle of the relationship between Finkel and Longo.
Right.
Is what most of the movie is about.
Really wasn't about the crime, even though it was part of it.
It's part of the story.
They didn't spend a whole lot of time on it.
Yeah,
exactly. More of an overview.
So, I mean, obviously that interview, it kind of jumps ahead in the story a little bit, but we got to go, so this is January 13th of 2002, the FBI and the Federales, they catch up with Longo, they arrest him, and it was after this that, Longo starts to tell them some details about what happened in the days after his family died. But he never says that he killed them.
No.
He never confesses to the crime. What he does say is that after December 16th, when his family is not around, missing, I'm not sure what he's telling them.
Right.
But he says that, he went to Blockbuster, he rented a movie. He's trying to distract himself for his family being missing. He's going to the gym to work out. He attended the Starbucks Christmas party that they held at a local pizza place.
Which was strange because I saw an actual video of one of the coworkers there, and she said he acted like nothing occurred. Just, having at the party, having a nice time. But
that's what a con man can do.
Right.
Right? They can definitely do that. There was one, I'm assuming this is a different coworker, but one coworker would say that Longo had told him that his wife had left him for another man. So he's trying to set up some stories, possibly.
Kind of sounds like Peterson a little bit.
Yeah.
Some of the lies Peterson would tell.
That can maybe help explain
right.
what he knows has already happened. The day after Christian Longo hears the reports on the news that the body of a little boy had been discovered in the water, which we know to be his son, Zachary, Longo picks up his final paycheck from the Starbucks and he drives to San Francisco. For some reason, he applies for a job at another Starbucks in San Francisco.
So like he was going to stay there?
But he doesn't. He bolts. And that's when he heads to Mexico.
He says, I got to get out of here, man.
Yeah. And he goes to Cancun at that point. He's telling them kind of play by play. As he gets there, he rents a cabana, which we said. He spends time with a group of British travelers. He smokes a lot of pot. He toured some of the ruins. And all the while, he's pretending to be this journalist, Michael Finkel. And as you talked about, he's kind of getting close to this travel photographer, whose name is Janina. So one thing that I found very interesting is that he does tell a federal agent that it's his looks and his speaking skills that he felt had helped him get away with so many different cons and crimes. Whether it was the way that he looked, people trusted him. He had a trusting look about him.
Right.
He was well-spoken. People trusted him more than they would.
The average Joe.
The average Joe, maybe.
Yeah.
And there had to have been something to that because he did get away with a lot of these things. And he was able to con his way through life there for quite a while. Wasn't a great existence.
Yeah.
But he wasn't working. He wasn't making any money. He was definitely able to
have the house of cards in his favor.
Yeah. So, I think one of the things, Gibby, that he does tell FBI agents is that he sent them to a better place. I mean, I think that was a quote. I sent them to a better place. He will never say the words, I killed them. Now, you heard Finkel say that he does tell him that much later on. But he will not tell the police that he killed them. But I sent them to a better place is pretty damning.
I would think so.
in itself. So as lawyers are preparing for a not guilty plea and a capital trial on four charges of first-degree murder.
Okay.
That's what they're preparing for. And there's all these, this pretrial activity. There's a bunch of defense claims about the fact that Longo was tricked into returning to the U.S., that he wasn't told of all his different rights and things
right
before he was brought back.
And I think what they were trying to do was to get the death penalty off the table, right?
I think they were, because Longo apparently didn't know that Oregon had the death penalty.
Right.
Because what I read was the first that he had learned of it was on the flight back to Oregon.
Yeah, that's what I heard too, that, you know, basically he, that's when he realized that, you know, they had that.
And I don't know him knowing that fact, what it would have changed. You know, I assume he had already made the decision to kill his entire family.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think he thought he was going to get caught. Most people don't.
No.
But would he have driven to another state and done it? I doubt it.
Right.
But I found that interesting, that was the first time he learned of it, the fact that they had the death penalty.
If I understand right, though, before the trial even began, he first pleads guilty to the murder of his wife and to his one daughter, Madison.
Yeah, without any deal.
Yeah.
Because his lawyers are trying to negotiate with prosecutors to avoid the death penalty. But like you said, he goes ahead and, for whatever reason, pleads guilty for Mary Jane and Madison, but he will not plead guilty to killing Sadie and Zachary.
Which is strange.
Very strange.
So
if you've already admitted to two, why not admit to the other two? But the court is forced, I guess, because he won't, they're forced to enter a not guilty plea on Sadie and Zachary, on those two charges.
Okay.
You know, the defense goes through the natural things. They try to get a change of venue. That's denied.
Which makes sense. I mean, it was heavily in the media, so you'd want to. But again, it was heavy in the media, so where do you go?
And they always, you know, most of the times they try that on these big, high-profile cases.
Right.
And I think the judge, whose name was Huckleberry.
Don't mess with a Huckleberry.
I'm your Huckleberry. It just cracks me up. I don't know why he shouldn't be. His name's Robert Huckleberry.
I wonder how many of our listeners will know what you just...
They will.
What movie that was referenced to.
They will
to.
If they like that movie. But, you know, he basically rules based on what you just said, which is we'd have to move this thing out of the whole state to escape the media coverage.
Right.
And even then might not be able to do it.
Yeah, pretty doubtful.
So the prosecution's case, I mean, was pretty simple. You know, their angle was this guy's a cold-hearted killer, and that he killed his entire family because they were too much of a burden. He couldn't provide for them. He couldn't take care of them. And there was some evidence, according to the prosecutors, that he had planned this months in advance. So one of the things that they had was this computer.
Yes.
And they find some pretty interesting stuff on there. Right, Gibbs?
They did. I mean, they even found a website called Hitman Online.
Hitman Online.
So.
Which apparently offered all kinds of different advice or different ways to murder people and get away with it.
I would suggest that you don't Google that right now.
It will not look good for you if you do something
right.
Bad.
Yes.
Of course, our search histories are not making us look good.
No.
If anything happens
pretty
at
much,
this point.
Yeah, if something happens non-fault of my own, I'm pretty much screwed regardless because of my web history.
Yeah, it's pretty dark
so
at this point.
But so they find this website called Hitman Online, different types of method of murder. And they also find some obituaries that have information scribbled on the margins.
Yeah, it was almost like he had taken people's obituaries and started to put in his family's information.
Kind of playing out their own, right? We also remember, you know, we were talking earlier about how he started isolating you know, his wife, Mary Jane, from Mary Jane's family, right?
Yeah, so, I definitely think that was part of his plan.
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely setting things in motion.
But one of the craziest things was that I guess he had built up some frequent flyer miles on his credit card.
Yeah.
At some point, and he used those to fly, and I can't remember. I think it was South Dakota. He flew somewhere crazy just to send a postcard.
Wow.
Back to her family.
So they thought that way. They would think they've always were in South Dakota.
Yeah.
And wouldn't look any further past that.
So the guy's got no money, but he's got some frequent flyer miles.
Well, that $100,000 worth of credit cards probably built it up.
Yeah, no kidding. Never thought about that.
Yeah.
And so he sends this postcard just to kind of lay a false trail.
Yeah.
And I got a kick out of that because that's just, I mean, to go to that length.
That's pretty extreme.
Because remember, he hadn't killed him.
No.
He's just trying to...
He's setting the stage.
I don't even know at that point if he is.
Yeah, you know...
But maybe he is because you talked about him starting to discard their things.
Yeah, and it comes back up again. And, you know, here he is on the way out, you know, from Toledo to Oregon. You know, he is getting rid of personal belongings and... And like I said, from family photo books to the kids' clothing, the kids' toys, their baby books. I mean, why else would you do that, right?
Yeah.
Especially if you have no money.
I agree.
Why would you get rid of it instead of trying to find a place to...
Could have hocked it, sold it somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
but one thing the prosecutors did have a problem with, they had no direct evidence, right? They had all this circumstantial evidence, and they had a lot of it.
Yeah.
But they had no direct evidence to link Longo with the killings. You know, there was a witness that could place him on this bridge, I guess, and that played some significance. And there was a man that contacted authorities after he heard about the bodies on the news and said that he had had an encounter with a man in a reddish minivan that stopped on the bridge. So all that's playing into him either throwing the bodies over the bridge or, you know, getting rid of the bodies that way. And prosecutors would say that it was the two older children, and those were the two that were found first, right? Zachary and Sadie.
Right.
That they were thrown into the water. So they were kind of matching that up with these sightings or these stories about people either seeing him on the bridge or meeting him on the bridge. I think one thing that was pretty damning to his case was a couple that was staying at that same condo. And apparently they had heard some really loud, what they called dragging sounds coming from a nearby room.
I think you get that when you drag a
body in a suitcase.
Yeah.
Especially
you got a 110-pound body in a suitcase and you're dragging an adult across woman. The floor.
Yeah. And then I think Longo's own statements were used against him. You know, the statement we talked about that he had made when they
sent him to a better place.
Yeah, the prosecutors used that against him.
Yeah,
but I do want to play one clip from the prosecutor.
He placed his hand on her throat and he began to squeeze. And in a violent struggle, she fought for her life. But she wasn't able to overcome the defendant. In a matter of 3 or 4 minutes, she was dead.
Let me ask you this, Chris. Is there anyone else we need to be looking for the deaths of your family? And here's his reply. Not that I'm aware of.
That's not a good sign.
No.
Right? So he's asking Christian, or the law enforcement is asking Christian Longo if there's anybody else that they should be out looking for. And he says, not that I'm aware of.
Right.
So Gibby, the defense, we know, has to do their job. They've got a mount of defense for Christian Longo. Now, they go about doing it in some crazy ways, but I don't think they have much to work with. One thing the defense claims is that the family was still alive on December 17th and that they had visited Longo at work. And then they went on to say that there were security tapes from the Fred Meyer, which is the store that the Starbucks was in.
Mm-hmm.
And those tapes would have proved
that the family was still alive, but the tapes had already been destroyed or recycled, you know, taped over.
And that's really the problem with a lot of this case, is that a lot of the evidence that would prove that what he was saying was true or not, they didn't have it.
Yeah.
Right? Perfect con man.
I mean, the other thing that the defense tries to do is say that the two, Mary Jane and Madison and Zachary and Sadie, were disposed of in very different manners and locations. And so they were trying to make that a big deal and say, you know, why would he kill the two older children by drowning and then asphyxiate Mary Jane and Madison?
Right. And I think that's where it gets strange, right? Because he says, like I was saying, she takes him to work, right? She picks him up. And he's saying that when she picks him up, all she has on is her house coat. She doesn't have anything else on. She's barefoot, picks him up in the house coat. And she is acting kind of distraught, is how he sells it. And that the fact that the kids weren't with her, which would be strange because, I mean, having a 2-year-old and little kids, you wouldn't leave them alone, right?
Never.
Well, they arrive back to the condo, and he's saying that, you know, Mary Jane begins to start whimpering and acting kind of strange, right? And I guess his next claim is that he finds little Madison lifeless on the bed.
So I got to back you up, because this is Christian Longo on the stand.
Yes.
Telling his side of the story.
His version.
And it's about 2 days into his testimony.
Yes.
That he starts to reveal what he says happened in the deaths of his children.
Here's the master manipulator. I think the jury's seeing it. They're seeing this con man in action.
So what Longo claims, Gibby, is that he found Madison, little Madison, lifeless on the bed. He began to shake Mary Jane, trying to get answers out of her. And she tells him, you did this, you killed us. And that's when she tells him that the other two children are in the water.
So he's trying to put the blame on her.
Yeah.
Saying she admitted that she put the kids in the water.
Yeah, he's trying to put the whole thing on her. And then he goes on to say, that's when he lost control. He wrapped his hands around Mary Jane's neck and strangled her to death. We know that's all bullshit.
Yeah, we know that's not true. But that's what he tells the jury. And then he tells them that. So after she was dead, he decided to go ahead and dispose of the bodies in two large suitcases. Right. So he's got to get rid of Madison and get rid of Mary Jane. He went to his baby daughter, and then he suddenly... And this is where, for me, it gets, I mean, it's already sick, but it really gets disturbing that he suddenly realizes that the child's still alive. This is his story. This is what he's telling the jury.
Yeah, he's right? on the stand, and we're going to hear from him in a minute. Not all of this, but we're going to hear
something. And he's saying, you know, even though she was breathing, I thought of her as dead at this point. And he said that he began smothering Madison. He stopped, saw her breathing again, so he grips this little girl's throat. He's using his big man's hands on this little girl's throat and
strangles her.
And then he has to put her in a suitcase, but it's too big for her little tiny body, and he fills it up with clothes. And here where we go, we've heard this before, to make it more comfortable. I mean, we've heard this in other cases, that after the person is dead, they want to give comfort.
Yeah.
Blows me away.
I mean, they were able to say, you know, Mary Jane had no history of violence. She had no temper, by all accounts.
I mean, she wasn't a big woman either.
She's 110 pounds.
Yeah.
She wouldn't probably be physically able to do all these things, right. dump the children.
It'd be tough
with these big heavy rocks that were attached.
Yeah,
lift the children with these big rocks, dump them over a bridge.
Yeah, the maneuver type of dead weight would not be.
It's not very plausible
no
at all. But I tell you what, we got to hear from Longo. Been right. saving this one, but
but you got to hear him talk.
The Bible says that you should not lie. The Bible actually says that there's resurrection of both righteous and unrighteous. They gave me an ultimatum at that point. They said I was still fairly adamant that I wanted to date Mary Jane, and they essentially said you can either live under our roof or you can date Mary Jane. And I chose to move out that next week. Got it up to probably close to $25,000. I was upset about that. I felt that at the outset I reasoned that this was something that she needed. I think internally I was probably thinking more about, what am I going to say to people now that our Ford Taurus has been taken? They're suddenly not going to see this car driving around. It was a pride issue with me as much as I think an inconvenience to Mary Jane. She would think about my comfort and the comfort of the kids over her, or the comfort of anybody else over her own.
Not a lot there, and I had to cobble a lot of that stuff together.
Right.
But he's talking about some of the things that we mentioned, the Taurus, and he's talking about that his pride couldn't handle the fact that the Taurus had been repossessed.
But yeah.
The one thing I took from that was the end of it, because he's really saying these very good, very nice things about his wife and how she would, put everybody else's needs ahead of herself.
Right. Compassionate.
Yeah. So I don't know how that plays into his story.
Well, I think we all accounts, and I think it was mentioned, several times that Longo was probably their best witness and the defense's worst, right? His own testimony, he screwed himself.
Yeah. I wish I had more of it.
Yeah.
But there wasn't a lot of it online, but I wanted people to be able to hear him. So the jury gets the case, right? After all the testimony said and done.
Right.
And on April 7th, 2003, apparently, they had deliberated for about 4 hours. They find him guilty of aggravated murder of two of the children, 4-year-old Zachary and 3-year-old Sadie. To piggyback off of what you were saying, one juror said in an article that it wasn't the circumstantial evidence alone that convinced him. It was Longo's own testimony. That's basically what you were saying. He was his own worst enemy.
Exactly.
On the stand. So, Gibby, we talked about earlier that he had already pled guilty to killing Mary Jane and Madison.
Right.
So basically all they had to convict him for was for the murders of Zachary and Sadie, which they did. And then the jury had the penalty phase, which was to determine whether or not he should get the death penalty. So the prosecution, obviously, they were arguing for the death penalty. And they said that, this man was a professional con artist. He manipulated everyone he came into contact with. And if he was not put on death row and ultimately put to death, he would pose a danger whether he got out. But he would also pose a danger to the prison population, is what they argued.
Yeah.
And some strange things happened while he was incarcerated in the county jail awaiting trial.
Yep.
That they brought up. He had committed a bunch of different infractions just in there.
Yeah, a handful.
He was caught chipping a hole in his cell window part of some type of an escape plan.
Yeah, he was caught writing letters to other inmates, even female inmates, which, communicating with other inmates that way was not allowed. So they also caught him doing that.
Now, on the defense side, they said there was no history of violence. They argued some of the things that we said in the very beginning, which is he had no signs of being violent as a child. He never beat his wife. He never started any fights.
But then the defense also talks about how his biological father was a violent alcoholic that abused his mom and would sometimes also not only hit his mom, but also would hit him.
Yeah, I think that's one thing we didn't talk about in the very beginning, right?
Right.
The father that we talked about was actually his stepfather.
Right. And that's where his happy childhood you know, was about.
And that's where the Jehovah's Witness, you know, religious aspect came from, his stepfather and mother. But as you said, his real father was apparently not a very nice guy.
Right. Abusive.
Yeah. He was, you know, pretty abusive.
Yeah. Allegedly.
Allegedly. So on April 16th, 2003, the jury comes back and they sentence Longo to death for all four killings.
Good for them.
Yeah, exactly. Several of the jurors would even say that they thought he did pose a threat, not just because he had killed four people, which should be enough on its own.
Right.
But they cited his intelligence and his ability to con people in any situation as a factor, I guess, for them in determining that he should be put to death. So Longo is currently incarcerated on death row at the Oregon State Prison. They still have capital punishment, so he's still eligible for death. But apparently they've had a moratorium on execution since 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what that will ultimately mean. Unless they lift that moratorium, he may spend, you know, life on death row.
So it's on hold.
Yeah. So right now his death is on hold. All right, Gibby, that's the story of Christian Longo. Yeah, ultimately, he's a bad dude. You know, a father that kills his wife and three very small children.
Yeah, he's...
You can't get much worse than that.
No, and 'cause he's a typical con man. I mean, even though he's in prison, he's still going at it, right? I mean, he's allowed to have a cell phone, and he's still campaigning. He wants to repay society by donating his organs. Right.
Who the hell's allowed to have a cell phone on death row?
I don't know, but he's got one, they say. And then he's really trying hard to put that facade out there that he's a good guy now by doing this. But the courts rejected it. So hopefully they stay with that and eventually the moratorium lifts. But yeah, I mean, what another sick individual that we covered tonight.
Yeah, definitely. We cover a lot. But this guy, and we talked about this in Peterson. Right. With the intimacy of the murder had something to do with the how heinous it was.
Right.
And you got to put that in this category and then you have to multiply it.
Yeah.
Because now, you know, Peterson was killed his wife and his unborn child.
Right.
Longo killed his wife and three very small
children. The innocence.
It's just
the trust.
Yeah. It's the trust factor.
Yeah.
Like we talked about.
Right.
Right.
You want to go down, you want to lay down at night next to your spouse, significant other, close your eyes and not worry that you're going to wake up with something bad happening to you.
Now you're going to freak out every woman that's listening right now.
Be wary.
All right, everybody. That's it for us. Stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
Understand that anybody who's paid attention to the media would have to come to the conclusion that I killed my wife.
Hi, my name is Zach Stewart Pontier. I'm one of the filmmakers behind The Jinx, and I'm excited to bring you the official Jinx podcast. We'll be revisiting all six episodes of Part 1 and watching along with Part 2 as it airs on Max, starting April 21st.
Bye-bye.
The official Jinx podcast. Listen on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.